Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana, for joining me. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Alex Belt. Alex is Inupiaq and Koyakon Athabascan. Alex works in recovery and is 4 years sober, and on this show, he courageously shares his story for those who are struggling. Alex would like the listeners to know that he has struggled with a variety of issues and hopes that if you get anything from this interview, it is that if a hard-headed guy like him can do it, you can too. So guys, please help me welcome Alex Belt. Hi, Alex. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Are you able to go ahead and introduce yourself so our listeners out there can get to know you, please?
Yeah. My name's Alex Belt. I'm 38 years old. I am Koyakon Athabascan and Inupiaq. I was born and raised in Fairbanks, Alaska. And throughout the time up until now, I've ended up living out here in the Mattsu Valley. And I'm a person in long-term recovery.
Can you tell me what things looked like before you got sober?
I can. I mean, we'll have to start kind of like at the very beginning, right?
Yeah.
Kind of lead you back. Okay, so like I said, I was born in Fairbanks. I had a pretty good childhood for the most part. I was raised by my mom and part of the time by my grandparents. My mom, she was a wonderful lady. She's no longer with us, but she struggled with alcoholism and drug abuse kind of like when I was a kid. So I spent a majority of the time with my grandparents and some of the time with her. So yeah, I grew up with my grandparents and then part of the time with my mom. Like I said, it was a very loving household. My aunts were living with my grandparents at the time too. So I was surrounded by a bunch of women as a young kid out in kind of the sticks of Fairbanks near Esther. And, you know, I kind of felt different all the time when I was a little kid. I was definitely very gawky and looked like a dweeb. So I remember getting made fun of quite a bit at school. But if we're going back to like how I got started, like what it was like for me, when I was with my mom, there was periods of time when I would watch her be a victim to domestic violence and watching her drinking with her boyfriends. And I was exposed to quite a bit growing up, you know what I mean? And I remember thinking like I never wanted to kind of end up like that. But I just yearned to be like all the rest of the kids and have like a mom and dad that I always felt different. And I don't know, I started feeling apart from other people at a pretty early age because I had these things going on at home like that and comparing myself to other kids. So when I came around like 11 years old and there was a neighborhood kid smoking some weed, I gladly accepted and I just felt so cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just started doing the wrong thing. It kind of just started progressing really quickly after that. My grandparents had divorced when I was about 12 years old. They were together for about 25 years, and it was a pretty crazy time, and it was very tumultuous. I ended up staying with my grandma, moving to Anchorage with her, and starting school in a different city. And shortly after I finished eighth grade, she found out she had pancreatic cancer. You know, it was just a really hard time for me. I ended up finding weed and smoking weed with some of the other kids when I was in eighth grade. And I was under the care of my aunt at that time. She was my legal guardian. And within a year, my grandma had passed away. And I remember that was like my last lifeline to the world. Like I grew up with my grandparents and I had already lost my grandpa, who was like the only man in my life, you know what I mean? During that divorce. And then my grandma, who was my best friend, I felt pretty lonely and broken. From that, like after she passed away, I was just entering into high school. I started hanging out with the other lonely kids, you know what I mean? Like just people just like me, and with problems with not feeling like they were accepted and fitting in. And we started drinking. It was just really like a roller coaster, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I within that first year, freshman year of high school, I had already started drinking like every single weekend and going to raves. And during raves, I would just black out every single time I drank. I just loved alcohol. And then started experimenting with some other drugs and sneaking out. I had my aunt, Teresa, completely horrified and worried because she didn't know what to do with me. And, you know, nothing that all the consequences that started kind of rolling in, nothing stopped me from wanting to pick up a drink. It just like was fuel to the fire. You know what I mean? I passed out in the girls' bathroom at Diamond High School. Somebody reported me, thought that I was dead, but I'd really just went to a party the night before and we thought it would be a cool idea to go to high school or go to school while we're blacked out drunk, and I just passed out. And I remember I was in the principal's office and my aunt had to come get me and she just looked so disgusted. And I just thought it was so cool and I had little snowboarding goggles on my head. And she was mortified and I got suspended for a week. And, you know, I went right back to drinking as soon as I got, that just gave me time out to not have to do any schoolwork or anything like that. And I just kept partying. I went back in a week later. And at that point, like I said, since I was going to so many raves, I'd already started experimenting with other drugs. I just decided school wasn't for me. And I dropped out. I was told if I got a job and got my GED, that my aunt would be okay with that. So that's exactly what I did. I got a GED within 2 weeks. And started working at the Fireweed Theater, I think, when I was 16. And all that money just started going back into drinking and drugs. So what it was like for me, right? Like, I don't know how to do anything responsibly to this day. You know what I mean? I'm an addict and alcoholic through and through. When I was drinking and partying, like, all these things during high school, I had a lot of opportunities to, like, kind of wake up and think that this isn't probably the smartest thing to do. Like I was 15 and I remember blacked out and woke up to getting raped, you know what I mean? And told my friends and really freaked out about it. And the only thing that kind of got me through that was just picking up the bottle again. It wasn't like, you know, I'm like, maybe this is a problem thing that you should probably stop drinking if things like this are happening. It was just really poor me, and I'm gonna keep drinking about it. And I was very depressed and just kept going with that. I mean, I kind of hate talking about this part of my story because it's just so, it's kind of pathetic, you know what I mean? Because I just kept going on a whirlwind of destruction. I moved around a lot of different places and I kept getting in more and more trouble and a lot more crazy situations. Like, you know, I've been raped a few times while drinking and partying. Again, like I said, I played the victim card with a lot of that and used that as fuel for my fire and told everybody else that had a problem with me partying like the way I did that it was because of them. Eventually, throughout all these escapades, when I was about 25, I ended up in Fairbanks and I was shoplifting to pay for a crack habit. Unfortunately, like, took a bleach bottle and sprayed somebody in the face with bleach in an attempt to, like, get away from, it was a store employee, and I maced that man with bleach and got arrested and spent about 4 months in jail. And I remember being scared to death because I had never been to jail before that. And, you know, the entire time I was in there, all I could do, I just couldn't wait to get back out and start drinking again. That's exactly what I did. I made it back out for like 2 weeks and caught another charge. I didn't report to probation. I had a felony under my belt for assault, and I got a pretty good deal. I mean, I only did 4 months in jail, and they gave me 24 months with 18 suspended. So I ended up doing 4 and 6, right? And then the first day I got out, I went back to drinking and smoking crack again, and took my friend's car and was driving around Fairbanks at 2 a.m. with no headlights on, and took the cops on a chase and got a felony eluding charge. I obviously got caught. And then, you know, I spent 3 years in jail. And the sick part with me is that I couldn't put together clean time in jail. I kind of really adapted to the environment in there. And it wasn't even a punishment at that point. I don't know how many people you've talked to that have talked about their incarcerations, but I've been through quite a few different facilities. And I could always find something, whether it was Pruno, Suboxone, heroin and meth. I went down to Colorado and there was quite a few different options to keep using. And, you know, I took advantage of that for every opportunity I could. And I did 3 years straight and got out and overdosed the first day I was out back on probation. And I mean, honestly, it's just a lot of that continuing up until about 4 years ago. Going to jail, getting released, absconding from probation, getting chances to go to a halfway house or to different treatment centers, and, you know, not taking advantage of those situations and just getting high one in every single one, right? Until 2019, where I got picked up for a probation violation for partying in somebody's hallway, and somebody called us in. I spent 9 months in jail, and the only place that they would let me get out to was a place called Nugent's Ranch. It's Alaska Addictions Rehabilitation Services now, but the ranch. And I didn't have any intentions of staying clean when I got there. At that point, I was pretty much just using to try and kill myself, in all reality. And I wasn't sure that, because they go off the 12 steps there. And you get a sponsor and you're doing meetings every day. And I wasn't sure that those words and God could ever keep me sober. But I don't know. I spent 10 months there and I don't know when the shift happened, but it did. And I think I kind of just started seeing that I could kind of continue life sober as I went through there. And I graduated, you know, I ended up following up with outpatient treatment at a place called True North and meeting more people in the community out here. Got opportunities to kind of like, I don't know, my story is kind of all over the place right now, but that's kind of what it was like. It just a lot of jail, in and out of jail, in and out of jail, and putting myself through situations to where like I almost died. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Man, I was listening to you and holy cow, you have a story. And, you know, I have some similarities and I could relate to some of the stuff that you said. Like, you know, I went to college and summer fine arts camp in Fairbanks. And I remember sneaking out and going to the raves there in, you know, the warehouses, wherever they would set up there. And then being so scared when there would be like somebody pulling out a gun and shooting in, you know. That's a memory I have of raves. And when you said raves, I was like, whoa, yeah, that brings me back. And the constant like blacking out, that was me too. Not knowing, waking up, not knowing what the heck happened and just being ashamed of what my friends were going to tell me what I did and stuff like that. And being stuck in that, you know, poor me state, like you said. Oh, you can get stuck in that. No kidding. For a while. And it's so hard to pull yourself out of that shame, you know? Yeah.
I tried to zoom through so much of my story in just a few minutes and I really lost kind of the thing. But because I was trying to kind of keep on track with like what it was like. But yeah. I mean, I can definitely answer some more. I think I went through too much history right then and there and kind of left out some of the good juicy pieces of it. But it was It was awful. Like, I was a threat and menace to society, and all of these things kept happening to me. And kind of just like what you said, I took a victim stance to the world. You know what I mean? Like, because my mom grew up an alcoholic and I had to experience that, you know, it was everybody else's problem but mine. And I guilted people. I manipulated people. And, took advantage of that and just acted like a complete victim to the entire world and created a lot of victims in my path.
Man, you could write a book. You should write a book.
Oh, embarrassing.
Oh my gosh. You should write a book. That would be like a bestseller, man. I swear. It's so captivating. You know what I mean?
I could. I'm very thankful that I've been arrested all those different times. And I remember I was just in Fairbanks. Like, I had the opportunity to, like, so, like I said, I harmed so many people along the way, right? Like, I fortunately have a relationship with most of my family members, but it's come little by slowly. I've had to kind of show some commitment and earn their trust again. But I had the opportunity to go up to Fairbanks last year and watch my sister get promoted to a lieutenant in the fire department.
Wow.
While I was there celebrating with her and out at a restaurant, I actually ran into one of the correctional officers that, because I'm still on bail currently. My mm-hmm. charge was in 2019, and that was for promotion to contraband because I had Suboxone on my person. And it's still going through the legal process, but I'd ran into the correctional officer, and like I got a, it was like, such a crazy opportunity because I had the chance to kind of like smile and he saw kind of like me healthy now, right? And I got to tell him thank you because in all honesty, they kind of saved my life. Like all of these people were kind of just like angels, even though they're correctional officers. Mm. You know, I wouldn't be here today if that hadn't happened. I would most likely either be doing exactly what I was doing or worse off, I'd be dead. So...
That's a good question too. Would you change anything in your life?
Here's the thing about that, right? Like I have a lot to make up for. I have a lot of amends to make and I've caused so much harm. Like I'm not proud or happy of all of these harmful things that I've not only done to some of my family members, loved ones, and friends, because those were my closest victims, you know what I mean? But then like the community as a whole, you know, I obviously wouldn't want to mace somebody in the face with bleach. You know what I mean? Shoplifting meat to trade for half price for drugs so I can continue buying crack. But at the same time, like some of those things, if it's in a way that I can help people relate to me or just, you know, provide some hope, support, or encouragement, or just even be able to listen for somebody, I wouldn't change it. But like some of those things, like, I mean, I obviously wouldn't want to mace somebody in the face with bleach. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, going through that and, you know, making it through Nugent's Ranch, I heard that Nugent's Ranch is pretty, you know, one of the tougher treatment facilities. That's amazing. And you are working at in recovery services. And so, you know, it must be amazing for you to go through all of that and then make it through that and then watch other people, inspire other people, you know, starting off in where you were when you went in there and then making it through the whole program and, you know, watching them grow and then, you know, graduating and reuniting with families and stuff like that, that must feel so good.
It's the stuff that dreams are made of, right? Like I don't consider my work, right? Because that's where I work, a place that's better than any other treatment centers or anything like that. I do appreciate that it was like, it's, I think what it is it's long-term. You know what I mean? Like I hadn't ever tried to mm-hmm. adult since I was a child. Like I was a failure to launch, right? Like I had to learn how to do everything sober and how to be get, like, and I'm still learning. Don't get me wrong with that. Like, I had to learn how to, you know, mature. And throughout that process, because I spent about 10 months there, I had the opportunity to kind of do that. Like, I worked with a sponsor, and like my counselor at that place is just like an angel, because she had been through so many of the things. She's in recovery herself. You know, and I had a lot of people holding my hands, kind of. I did it kicking and screaming that entire stay. And I just had to stumble through life, learning the hard way in recovery, right? And just kind of give myself a shot and see that I kind of could do it. And, you know, like I said, I followed up with outpatient services at a place called True North. And that place was just as special. Like, I met my entire friends group when I was going to classes out there for outpatient services. And those people are like my best friends to this day. You know what I mean? But being able to work there at the ranch, yeah, that's what you're talking about. These miracles and watching people kind of like, you know, the lights come on, and just little by little, it's such a privilege. I'm blessed for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Man, you ever have people reaching out to you, you know, that have graduated and stuff like that? Like, or are you like super busy with that whole thing?
Oh, you mean like people that I had graduated with, or just, what do you mean?
Yeah, that have been through the program and you know, you keep in touch with them and stuff like that.
Yeah, most of them are still my best friends to this day. Like the group of people that I went to the ranch with, most everybody I still talk to. One of my best friends is working at a different treatment center, and through him, I met another good friend of mine. I was living with somebody I went to, like, I got my very first apartment ever in recovery with somebody I went through the ranch with, and I still keep in touch with a lot of them to this day. The thing in recovery fields, right, like, I'm sure, I'm not 100% certain where you work, but, like, a lot of people want that lived experience, so a lot of my current coworkers are former graduates as well.
Wow, yeah. The reason I ask is some of the people that, you know, I've been through treatment a number of times, number of outpatient treatments. You know, I've made it through one residential treatment through the Ernie Turner Center, and then I tried residential treatment centers two times before, but I walked out of those, you know. Mm-hmm. And the reason I asked that was because some of the peers that I went with, you know, unfortunately didn't, you know, stick with being sober or in recovery, you know, and it's super hard to hear that, you know.
Yeah. There's quite a few people. Everybody has their path, but you know, like, it's your life, right? Like, I unfortunately, one somebody I was just in outpatient treatment with, like, honestly, like, my first gay best friend, because, like, throughout my entire life, like, I've never trusted people. First of all, I couldn't even trust myself, but I kind of got to walk through and learn how to be friends with another gay man, because it's very stereotypical, right? Very catty. But somebody I was in outpatient treatment with, that was like a dear, dear friend to me. You know, somebody I didn't really expect to kind of fall out. He just unfortunately passed away like a couple weeks ago, or on Easter. You know, if people that I graduated with or anything like that, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, our life kind of depends on this, and I'm going to love people where they're at and do what I can to best support them.
Yeah, definitely. What were your biggest challenges when you were getting into recovery?
I was very institutionalized. So that was like a definite challenge for me. Like, I guess, like, in terms of like not wanting to get honest, and like, you know, looking at people that are getting honest and having some morals and stuff like that, kind of like harassing them or thinking they're a narc or just whatever, you know, just that criminal mentality. And thinking that the police are going to get out to you, like, are out to get you when they're really your biggest friends. My biggest challenges has first and foremost always been me. You know, I lack confidence quite a bit of the time, and I don't trust God, I think. And I try and take my will over in my life, and that ruins a lot of things. But you know, it's because it's all kind of a learning curve for me, but I've walked through some grief in recovery, and I'm still standing here. I'm still on bail, and I get the opportunity to go to reducing recidivism events, and I just had the opportunity to, I mean, that's not a barrier, even though I thought it would be, you know what I mean? But I have the opportunity to, like, I went to a crisis intervention training alongside law enforcement and Wasilla Police and first responders, and I kind of got to share my story and, you know, see how these people are just, like, so, the community is really just trying to support you. Another big challenge that I think that I still currently kind of deal with, I think, is just loneliness and codependency and things like that, in which I'm still kind of, that's like, those are the big issues that I don't like to talk about, and mental health, right? I've struggled with mental health since I was a kid, and really just ragging on myself and anxiety and all these different things. If we're talking about real challenges, I think that it's just like loneliness and your mental health and things like that.
What does your life look like now?
What does it look like now? Well, right now I have the day off. So right now I'm working as a counselor in training at the ranch, or Alaska Addiction Rehabilitation Services. Oh my God, the board of directors would get so mad if they heard me calling it the ranch. I went through treatment and did some outpatient and got really involved in the community out here and started going to a lot of self-help meetings and getting ensconced in the recovery community out here. And, you know, I started off as a ranch hand when I first started working there and moved my way to the receptionist because I wasn't too happy with shoveling pig poop when I was the ranch hand, went through the receptionist. And from there I was promoted to the administrative assistant and then went to intake coordinator, where I was able to get people into treatment and, then some case management and now where I am today. But, you know, I like to, because of my criminal background, like I said, I was part of that Wasilla crisis intervention team training and then joining some of the reentry things happening around the community, because I believe that we need a seat at that table when they're being discussed. And my good friend Kara Nelson has gotten me super involved in that community, and I'd love her for that because she's such an inspiration to me. And so I like to do those events. You can find me at meetings and, you know, just spending time with loved ones and family and friends. You know, I have kind of a really awesome life, and which is funny to talk about how, like, I'm sitting here whining about loneliness sometimes for myself. But like I said, I just try to keep that a reality check and see of how I can be of support to some people around me. You know what I mean? I'm not alone.
Yeah, awesome. All right, man. Thank you so much.
All right. You have a great day.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. This next week, when I have another strong, courageous person on who is walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project on 92.9 FM KPCR, Pirate Cat Radio, serving Los Gatos and the Greater South Bay Area in California. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.